Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and welcome today to Bookworm. One of my favorite writers is with us. His name is John Keane. He's been on the show before. That time, we were talking about his works of fiction. This time, we're talking about a book called Punks, and it's a book of poetry that he's been writing since high school till virtually the present. It's very charged and exciting poetry. I am curious, how did you begin to write poetry? But what first drew you in?
Well, first of all, let me just say thank you for having me on your show. This is very exciting to be back. I love Bookworm and love listening to your interviews. So it's great to be able to talk about this book. I probably began writing poetry, bad poetry, like many people, as a child. I was writing little poems, and I wrote poetry through junior high and high school and into college. I was on the literary magazine in college as in high school. But it wasn't until I was a senior in college that I actually had an opportunity to focus on poetry. And I took a poetry workshop with Ishmael Reed, who was a visiting professor. And he was teaching a poetry workshop and a fiction workshop. So I submitted both fiction and poetry to get into one or the other. And I went to the building where his office was and to check the door to see if I'd gotten in or not gotten in. And I saw it was on the poetry list and he was standing there. Sorry. Got to meet him for the first time, and he said, "You're a poet, you know."
Ishmael Reed was one of the first African-American novelists I read. I've been reading him from his first book, The Freelance Pallbearers, on. I think he may have small press volumes of poetry that precede it. Not only did I love him, I still love him. And like you, I began early too. I was on my high school, not literary magazine, but newspaper. When I got to college at the State University of New York at Buffalo, as it used to be called, I was the literature, drama, and movie editor. And so I've been doing versions of what I do, like you, from the very start. Joining me today is a colleague, another young, aspiring writer. His name is Sean Sullivan, and it was he, when your book came in the mail, who immediately started reading it and said, "Oh, Michael, we have to do this." And this book, Punks, is in 7 parts. Each part has a quotation from, I believe, an African-American poet. Are these among your favorite writers?
Yes. So, I was thinking about how to structure the book, because one of the challenges, I think, when I first brought it to the publisher was how to make sense of this, because the book really is a kind of anthology of what I call ghost books. I had a little chapbook that came out a few years ago from Seven Kitchens Press called Playland, which includes about 15 or so of the poems in here. But earlier versions of this manuscript would find publishers and then things would fall through, or people would look at it and they'd say, "No, we're not, you know, this is, it's interesting, but we don't know, it's a little too controversial." So when the publisher came through finally, and I was trying to put it together, I was thinking of different writers who served as touchstones for me. And so that sort of accounts for the various quotes in preceding, pretty much each section, except for the section Trees, which was a collaborative effort with the late poet Cynthia Gray, Cindy Lohr. But all the others, I think Pamela Sneed precedes one, Essex Semple and Reggie Harris, Dion Brand. These are all poets who are very, very important to me. And so I felt like, you know, they served as guides entering each of the sections.
It's marvelous. This book, which sort of amounts to your first major book of poetry, is over 200 pages long. It's very entertaining to read because as I read it, I got a sense of who you are and how you changed over the years of writing poetry. The poems at the end of the book are very different from the poems at the beginning of the book, and it felt like the poems at the beginning of the book were celebrations of being a Black gay man. As you move along, that recedes, and you're writing a more complex kind of poetry, but the early poems are poems of sexual celebration. Would you agree?
Yes. In the first section, I feel like you get more of a sense of an overview, right? The poems include reminiscences, but there isn't a sense of something just irrevocably lost. I think in that section, though, the prose poems in The Lost World, I feel like, you know, there you get a sense that this is a world and a kind of way of being that is really gone. It's only carried around in the, you know, lives and memories and bodies of people who lived in the time, in, you know, sort of in this time, kind of the early AIDS period, the early period of the AIDS pandemic, into the 1990s, the moment before social media erupted, you know, the kind of world we're living in now.
Sean, do you have a question?
John, it's a pleasure, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So basically, I need a book like this every year. I need a big, beautiful poetry book that's going to fill me with a poetic perspective. In the seven sections, there really are different types of poems, and there are different types of perspectives I'm being given. Well, they all have a poetic essence. The second section, The Lost World, which has a great epigraph, I remember, ergo, I live. And it sounds a bit as if The Lost World is our memories and is a world that has passed us by. And I know that there was one in particular we were hoping to have you read, which is These Days, These Days.
Okay. These Days, These Days. The half-life of loneliness hardening in me like sclerosis. Didn't Ian Curtis sing about that? These days, these days. Fetal on my futon in the darkness, my senior year roommates out studying or practicing or organizing their futures, all the things good college students do. I can't hear Monk or the Beastie Boys right now. Trouble in mind, I'm bluer than blue and can't even conjure a vision of what to do. Anxiety swarming, thoughts forming like storm clouds and breaking off. No word to Eric, the others at work. If I speak of it to anyone, any of them, I'll no longer be acceptable. Didn't I slip into the GSA dance last spring and slide right out again, praying no one saw me? Do I not sequester myself in the queer section of the Special Collections Library deep underground as if conducting private research? These days, these days. Then, turning 21, the itinerary bright as a ruby in my memory, Washington Street, the glad days, Spit Max's Man Ray, the paradise. Hitting the clubs tonight is impossible. I've got a history paper to research. My stomach is tumbling and a friend is holding auditions for a play I want to be in. Spell number 7. Allison graduated. My roommates are in love or their books. Other friends are not responding. Who is this I'm sharing my pain with now? It's so dark I can barely make out his features, his hair, not even the outline of a crown. All I know is he's brown. His slender arms are open, welcoming. His bowed legs take hold of my own. Shut the door tight, lights out. These days, these days.
That's John Keane reading a poem from his new book of new and selected poems. The book is called Punks, and that was a prose poem called These Days, These Days.
And when we look in the next section, 10 Things I Do Every Day, which begins with a glorious poem called Gift, but the one I want to talk about in particular in this section is Punks, which is after and for Martin Wan. And to sort of talk about the essence of the book, I would love to hear you describe how Punks was chosen as the title and what that poem means to you.
Originally, when I was thinking of titling this book, I thought, you know, sissies would be a good title. And as it turns out, there are a number of books out there called, you know, titled Sissy or Sissies. Punks also has, you know, multiple meanings. Of course, in African-American vernacular culture, you know, punk is another word for a gay man, gay person. Punk, of course, directly also links us to, you know, punk rock. Then there's the idea of punk as a delinquent, you know, someone who kind of lives outside the law. And so I came across Martin Wong's work then and was just blown away. So this is the world before the Lost World, right? So this is the world, really the world of the 70s and early 80s. And so queer New York, but of course, but you know, by implication, kind of, you know, queer America, and particularly the queer experiences of a person of color. This is also the moment when hip hop is coming into being. And so this poem, when I read it aloud, I realized, you know, it has much more propulsive hip hop rhythms, right? So when I, you know, looked at it again, I thought, oh, this poem really captures something sort of essential about this book. I should tie it with Punks. And then of course the editors were like, it works.
Let's hear a little bit of it.
Just, I'll read a little bit of this. Punks. Hypnos on the headboard, check one. Donato's at my feet, check two. Twins, no, I'm not through yet. Got an altar to finish for a patron. Cityscapes for Eastside connoisseurs in 256 colors. Can you pick some? Holding still for a vein, just stick one. Came to New York from San Francisco. Game on the sign of gentry who owned Phoenix's first casino. Not just some Chino who don't come from nowhere. Hector, Chagall, Picasso, Renaud, Leger, Lawrence, Utrillo, Modigliani, Blahnik, Renoir, Miro, Sharp Days, the places, the friends of the faces, the maze of the city, the Puerto Ricans who embrace me. The inner spaces I'm drawing, the firemen kissing, the skateboarders flying, the streetwalkers, heroes and comic book heroes and smoky brown rubber, fragrance and hard the fierce animal smell of that man in Hell's Kitchen, the aroma of horseshit, sagebrush and sweat, war and the rumors of war, sweet oblivion, the rooftops, the bridges, the beat cops, the tunnels deep under Hudson and Clinton, Stanton and Forsyth, the body odor I tasted it. Heat, a taste of big heat, we carry ghost traces of adolescence, the impatience of waiting, who knows, we're fleeing, African temples, kids hanging in Lady Liberty, Hypnos calling out, do you hear me? Donato's crying out, do you want it? And I'll stop there. So you can hear it. I mean, you know,
wow. Just
that beat that's there, that I think, as I said, kind of in a certain way, underpins everything, all of the poems in their variety.
But you have a sense that the outlaw life is informing the rhythm of the poem, that this mm-hmm. is moving too fast for someone to hear, that this is the language, in a sense, of a con artist speaking too quickly for our possible understanding, but convincing us of something nevertheless.
Right. Well, that's New York, you know. That's the United States, you know. Right, there you go.
And it was so great to hear you read it, by the way. I'm so happy that happened because, you know, in my head, I do it at a different speed. And I must admit that your speed was impressive and I appreciate it.
I'm Michael Silverblatt and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with Sean Sullivan and the two of us together are talking with John Keane about his new book of poetry, Punks, New and Selected Poems. It comes from one of my favorite alternative, young, lively publishers at Song Cave Press, and we'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with John Keane about his new book, Punks, New and Selected Poems, 7 sections of writing with depth and breadth that spans decades.
And so the next section is called Trees, and it's 9 collaborative lyrics with Cynthia Gray. And again, the poems in here aren't like the other poems in here, which for me really rewards me as a reader because I'm encountering different types of writing as I go on. But I would love to hear about this section in particular.
the result of Cynthia reaching out to me in 2012 and 2013, I think she had worked with other poets as part of what she called the Collective Experience Writing Machine project. And she wrote me and said, oh, you know, poets who recommended that, people I think very highly of, you know, had recommended I work with you and we, you know, write poems together. And I thought, okay, this is exciting. Because I've also been always very interested in the experience of collaboration. I have two books that I did that were collaborative. One with Christopher Stackhouse, Seismosis, and one with Nicholas Mulner, Grind, which was art. So they're both art text dialogue books. And so, but this one, you know, was just purely poetry, this exchange via email. And she would send me poems or she would send me stubs of things and I would modify them, and then she would modify them, and then I would modify them. We'd go back and forth, and then we'd reach a point where we would both, you know, sort of collectively say, ah, this is done. It was a wonderful experience. And we unfortunately did not get a chance to publish these poems while Cynthia was alive. But I thought, you know, I asked the publisher, asked the editors, the publisher, if it would be okay to include them. And once we got permission from her parents, they said yes. And we decided to do it.
And then in the next section, I love it because this is when things are really beginning to take off. For example, the poem Jackie Robinson in Sportsman's Park, 1949, for my father. Mm-hmm. Right there, you get me on the title and dedication alone. Your good and tender spirit appeals to me so much. The final poem of this book, Beatitude, really expresses this so well and so beautifully and really touches me in a personal way.
This poem, Beatitudes, which is the final poem in the book, seems to be a poem that the whole book is building toward. The book starts by asking not what to love, but how to love. By this final poem, this is a poem about loving everything. And perhaps one might say that all poetry aims in this direction, but I don't know another poem that expresses this fast, unstoppable love so vibrantly. Having introduced it, I think we better hear it right away. Okay.
Okay, Michael. Okay, Beatitude. Love everything. Love the sky and sea, trees and rivers, mountains and abysses. Love animals, and not just because you are one. Love your parents and your children, even if you have none. Love your spouse or partner, no matter what either word means to you. Love until you create a cavern in your loving, until it seethes like a volcano. Love every time. Love your enemies. Love the enemies of your enemies. Love those whose very idea of love is hate. Love the liars and the fakes. Love the tattletales and the cowards. Love the hypocrites and hypocrites, the hucksters and the traitors. Love the thieves because everyone has thought of stealing something at least once. Love the rich who live only to empty your purse or your wallet. Love the poverty of your empty coin purse or wallet. Love your piss and sweat and shit. Love your and others' chatter, and it's proof of the expansiveness of nothingness. Love your shadows and their silent censure. Love your fears, yesterdays, and tomorrows. Love your yesterdays and tomorrows. Love your beginning and end, and your end. Love the fact that your end is another beginning, or could be, for someone else. Love yourself, but not too much, that you cannot love everything and everyone else. Love everywhere. Love in the absence of love. Love the monsters breeding in every corner of every city and suburb, all throughout the soil of the countryside. Love the monster breeding inside you and slaughter him with love. Love the shipwreck of your body, your mind's salted garden. Love, love.
So beautiful. That's John Keane reading a final poem in his new book, Punks, A New and Selected Poems. I'm a fan of your two works of fiction, Counter-Narratives and Annotations, both of which have been published by New Directions Publishers. And it seems as if your poetry is much more annunciatory, celebratory, straightforward. These fictions rank, to my mind, with the strangest of fictions of our time. The poetry is very straightforward, and I wondered whether you feel a strong difference between the writing of fiction and the writing of poetry.
That's a great question. Well, I'll say this. I've tried not to think about that too much. When I was younger, I would often have an idea, and I would write it first as poetry, and then realize, oh no, this has got to be a short story, because you're trying to tell a story in a poem. And of course, one of the beautiful things about poetry is that poetry can just be a series of images or, metaphors or similes. I mean, it can just be a list. You can do all kinds of very, just remarkable things with very little in poetry. And with fiction, you need some semblance of amplitude, even if it's a, brief, very brief story. I think with some of the poems in this book, particularly the ones in the middle of the book, they may feel more like the poems, for example, of Seismosis, or poems, or the prose of Annotations. And then, of course, there's a story in Counter Narratives, Blues, which consists of a series of statements linked by ellipses, which it to me almost feels like a poem. It feels very much like Annotations. So I guess I can see the connections between the poetry and the prose. I mean, I think with Annotations, I really wanted to write about myself, but in a way that was not the usual way. It's autobiographical. It could be a memoir, a work of fiction. And also, of course, some people have viewed it as a work of poetry. People say, your first book is a series of prose poems. Counter Narratives is very much, a collection of short stories, but other people have called it a novel. And then with Punks, I think you get the entire range. So I guess, something I said about that has been said about Counter Narratives, and I say about it, it's like, I'm constantly querying all of these forms, right? Mixing them up. I hope with productive results.
We are living in a time of changes of names. Suddenly, I've been told, for instance, by NPR, that gay is no longer the word to be used colloquially. Queer is. How do you feel about these changes?
Well, I mean, I feel like people have, the power to name themselves. Some people like gay, some people like queer. Some people don't want either label, but could easily, fall under either one. I think there are commonalities, but differences. And I do sometimes worry about, prescriptions where, when it comes to what you can and cannot say. I mean, of course, on the one hand, I think you don't want to offend people and misname them. On the other hand, I mean, I think certain people hold fast to certain descriptions. So, for example, with African-American Black, I mean, I both of those to me are fine. I mean, all African-Americans are Black people, and not all Black people are African-Americans, but there are commonalities across the Black diaspora. So I claim both terms. But I understand that, some people have very specific wishes about how they are addressed. And I try as a person to honor those, because I think, that's fundamental to respect and dignity.
Well, I think it's wonderful. And I think that a young Black person, or a young anyone, to be honest, reading your poems, who doesn't yet know how to think of himself as queer, as Black, as gay, as African-American, is coming into a work in which self-definition is thrown on stage like someone tossing dice. Who wins? What happens? Where does this go next? What kind of language do we watch this poet, my dear John Keane, what kind of poet does he become? decade by decade, section by section, we're watching the evolution of not just an individual, but something that has taken its shape as we've lived in our own times. When you look at the book, do you feel that it announces a whole itinerary of where you've been?
I do. I really do. Punks feels very expansive in a way that I feel it does give a sense of a journey, my journey, but a journey in a broader sense. One of the things that I was very glad we were able to do was to include some of those historical poems, which in a sense are speaking directly to counter-narratives, but in a very different way. I mean, invoking figures like Elaine Locke, Jackie Robinson, George Washington Carver, these figures that precede me speak to me, and I, am trying to speak back to them, or speak to them in a way, and bring them into the conversation to suggest that this is, that I'm not formed solely, by my immediate family or self, or, but the society and its history, its rich history, and the global history are all part of, what makes us who we are.
Right now, if I had to recommend a book to a young person trying to define themselves racially or sexually, no matter what race or sex that might be, I would send them to this book, Punks.
I think the expansiveness of the book makes me feel more expansiveness and nurtures my sense of being.
I've been talking with Sean Sullivan, my scholarly reader and friend, and we've been talking together with John Keane, the author of Punks, New and Selected Poems, published by The Song Cave. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much, Michael. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you, and thanks so much to you and Sean.
I've wanted to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, we are each taping remotely, so you may hear unusual sounds and echoes. You can visit our station, kcrw.com/bookworm, for a podcast of today's show, also available at all podcast services and on demand as well with KCRW smartphone apps. If you haven't already, do become a KCRW member. You're not going to hear conversations like this anywhere else. I want to give special thanks to my Bookworm Show collaborators, Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan. Without either of them, this show would not exist. Our engineer today is Desmond Taylor, and technical director is PJ Shahamat. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
A bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.